Hi, this is Kim of Kim Turner LLC. Our mission is to provide immersive, relevant training and consulting for the next generation of 911. Our instructors and consultants are current industry leaders and practitioners with over 360 years of combined experience in the field or under the headset. We are results driven. So if you're ready to elevate your training personally, for your department, or for your region, look us up online, www.thekimturner.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This is a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher, and we are recording live from the SANS Expo, the Venetian, in Las Vegas, Nevada, for the APCO 2018 conference. This has been an excellent week so far. I gave a session on Sunday for Imagine Listening. It was a huge room. It was full. And then I gave my repeat session yesterday, and it was full as well. It was standing room only. It was amazing. The stories that came out of there, I can't wait for you to hear them. They are very emotional. They are powerful. They are really, really good. I can't say enough about it. There were several times where I was even about to lose my shit during those times with those calls that they were sharing. They were just very powerful. And again, I just can't wait for you to hear them. This episode is sponsored by Kim Turner LLC. Make sure to check them out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as thekimturner.com for professional dispatch training for the next generation of 911. And this episode is also supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So my guest today, we've been talking for a bit now, and we're finally getting a chance to do this. And I'm so glad that we're able to do this actually face-to-face rather than over Skype, because you have got a long list of stuff that you do. So my guest today is Brian. He's a dispatch supervisor as well as tactical dispatcher out of Southern California, and he's also an instructor for Kim Turner LLC. How's it going, man?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing all right. So around what time did you fly in then?
I drove in this morning.
Oh, you drove in?
I drove in.
Oh,
it's
no shit.
Only 3 hours away.
Oh, well, that's not bad then. That's pretty good.
I turned it up to 11 on the radio, and I listened to some good music on the drive up. So it was a good time.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, that's good. I didn't realize you were this close.
Yeah, Southern California is about 3 hours from anywhere. At least That's what all the commercials everyone to come in.
That is true, yes, because Kim told me the exact same thing in one of the conversations we had, and she said that too. She said, in the advertising, you know, that's all over the place. And I thought, oh, all right, well, I have to remember that the next time in California. I've been there, I think, three times now to California. I was in San Diego. And then I was in, I flew into Burbank to go to, is it Oxnard? Oxnard? And all areas, very nice. I was there for presentations for Texas 911. But that first time in San Diego is for a Calnina conference.
Okay.
So, very nice area.
Yeah, what they don't tell you is it's 3 hours from anywhere, but 3 hours could be either 10 miles, 30 miles, or 50 miles, depending on the traffic.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, you guys got a lot of crazy traffic in there. When I was, one of the trips that I had, I was on, oh man, I don't even remember what highway it was, but I just remember seeing a sign going to LA, and there were, it seemed like 10 lanes, and I'm hauling ass with everybody else. I thought I was driving cool, being aggressive, but those drivers were way more aggressive than I was. I was trying to get through the lane so that I could get back to the airport, but it was all right. It was just more traffic than I've ever seen being on the East Coast, so.
Yeah, it's something all right.
Well, welcome to this episode. I'm very happy to have you on here. And I want to learn more about you and to share your story and the stuff that you're doing with Kim Turner LLC as well. So how did you get into public safety to begin with?
When I was a college student in 2002, actually it was the fall of 2001, I looked online at the university's website and saw that they were hiring. And one of the positions was for a parking community service officer. So I started working the toll booth, selling, I think they were $1.50 back then, for a parking permit for the day. So somebody would come in, get a parking permit, take their money, give them a permit. You should start it off, welcome back. This is part two.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually going to leave that in there. Yeah, just as Brian said, this is part two now, right away, right off the bat, because someone tried to call me, and what's stupid is that this this app that I'm using, along with this microphone, it says, for optimal use, put your phone in airplane mode so that there are no phone calls. What a dumbass. Why didn't I do that to begin with? So now in our continuation of this episode with Brian of Kim Turner LLC, he was just telling us about how he got into public safety.
So I befriended the dispatcher who had to take the money from us. And, you know, 3 months of that going in, listening to calls. And he was a, he retired as a sergeant out of LAPD. He had some really good war stories. He was shot in between the eyes and the bullet is still there. And has an incredible story about that and the dispatchers that helped save his life. And me and another CSO were inspired and thought we'd apply, so we did. We both were hired, first as part-timers, and then they had an opening about a year later, and I went full-time. So I was going to school full-time and working full-time as well. And that's how I got into the business. It's kind of,
nice.
Hey, would you be interested in this? And that's kind of been the way I've got where I'm at right now.
By saying yes.
Yeah, I have a hard time saying no. My wife would agree to that. And somebody says, hey, you think about doing this, or have you considered that? Sure, I'll do that. And, you know, before I know it, I'm overbooked or double booked and having a fun time.
That's cool, though. Yeah. I mean, it's to me, and I tell my kids this as well, it's all about the experience. Because I tell my kids something similar. It's like, don't always just say no, because you don't know how it's going to turn out. You might enjoy that. You know, it's just like trying new food and stuff. It's all about that experience. If you try it, it doesn't work out, well, then at least you know. You're not stuck with, what if I would have done that? You know, years later thinking, what if I would have just tried that? You know, you're always going to have that what if. But you said yes.
Yeah.
And here you are.
Shows you at a decision I made when I was 18 would lead me to be here with you today.
Yeah, man. So then, how many years have you been doing this then?
I started in the spring of 2002, so about 16 years.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. So we're around the same then, because I started out in 2001.
Okay.
And then I went all the way up to 13 and a half years, but then about total is like 17, 18 years now total for public safety, which is crazy to think. But, man, I fell in love with it. I caught that bug, and I've been doing it ever since. So what was your training like when you first started out?
Oh, they kind of threw a binder at me and said, here, read this.
Oh, and, no.
given the agency and the influx of calls and our summertime call volume at the university being minimal, it took a while to get signed off on a lot of incidents that we needed to experience and show that you could work solo. So it took a while, but it was pretty smooth. And one of the benefits of working at a small agency and that I've experienced in multiple agencies I've worked for is that they really care, and you're not just a number, and they really want you to succeed. So they put the extra time and effort into making sure that their mindset is, we want you to succeed. How can we help you do that? Rather than just part of a big machine.
Right.
That you might see at a different type of agency.
Exactly. That's good. That's always good to hear, you know, that type of thing, because at one point at one of my agencies, it was kind of like that. We were so down, you know, short staffed, like a lot of agencies still are. We were bringing people in, and they were going through training rather quickly. But then, you know, as soon as they got to the portion where it was time to take an emergency phone call, they couldn't do it. It took just that one first call to say, oh man, this isn't for me. And then they split, and then, you know, the six people that we're trying to put through that we spent all this money on, only one or two people go through. So it's good to hear that, you know, your agency was actually investing the time and really wanting to make sure that you were learning and succeeding.
Right. And then they supported me through the getting my bachelor's and master's to make sure that our school schedules were flexible enough to full-time employment. And then part of our union contract says that we're allowed, you know, pending staffing, to attend 3 hours of class during our work week and be paid for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It's another benefit of working at a university.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, a lot of people listening are probably going to be reaching out and say, can you give me his information? We want to learn more.
Yeah. There's a few universities that you can get free rides for you or any family members once you start working there. I think there's about like a 5-year investment. And, some of them have networks of, you know, you work at an agency in California that had a university and they've got a connection to something back east where your kid can go to for free.
Right.
So it's quite the thing for dispatchers with kids in high school to start looking at opportunities like that.
That's very cool. Yeah, because I didn't really have anything like that when I was working and going to school. So, you know, now I'm paying back a lot of money for all the schooling that I had.
What's your degree in?
I have degrees in web development, graphic design, and then a master's in journalism. So I have that all combined with my passion for 911, and it just happened to work out, man, that the company that I work for now is pretty much my dream job.
Nice.
And then, of course, because I get to continue doing this as well, telling stories and getting those out there. So it's been really good. What about your first call? Do you remember your first call?
I do not remember.
You know, a lot of people say that, but then there are some that say, yeah, I do. I remember the call like it was yesterday, and you know, some of them are funny, but the majority of them are pretty, pretty hard.
Yeah.
What about just you know, some calls early on, or maybe ones that have stuck with you?
You know, that working in a university environment, the types of calls we receive are not as frequent and not as diverse as municipal agencies. But one of the unique things that we have at the university I went to is a very big agriculture school in Southern California. And one of the calls during commencement, so this is the biggest, the prime time show for the university was some of the, I can't remember if it was pigs or cows, but they got out.
Oh, no.
And this is on the main thoroughfare to go to commencement. And so you can imagine the type of traffic and, luckily, it was in the middle of commencement, so there wasn't a lot of traffic coming in or out, but we were getting ready for egress, and it had been something that you learned in training. You're like, when am I ever going to use that?
Right.
But it was kind of a running joke. You call up the horse unit, and they love to get on the horses and go out, and they have their ropes, and they go out, and they'll lasso up whatever animal you want or herd it back. And that's exactly what we did. I made a phone call and I called up the horse unit and said, hey, we've got a problem on the south side of campus. Do you mind helping us out? And we had a unit to the north and south of where the animals were. And horse folks came on out, did their thing, and crawled them back into their pen, locked the gate, and that was that. Nobody even knew. At least anyone on campus didn't know.
Oh, man.
That's one of the more funny ones.
That is funny. you know, I don't think I've ever taken a call where I had something quite like that. I mean, I've had a lot of animal calls, and it's funny how people call in about, you know, animal complaints and such, but because they've seen certain things on TV, they think it's the exact same. So I think there was a show called, like, Animal Police or something, or Animal Cops, or one of the two, and I've never watched it before, but I remember seeing, like, commercials for it. Well, somebody had called in about, it was either a horse or a cow, one of the two, but they wanted us to send out the animal police to go and arrest them because of, I don't know, they were malnourished or something like that. And I said, we can send animal control out there to look, but they're only going to investigate and, you know, then go from there. I said, they don't get arrested right away, not like that. And they said, well, I mean, it happens on that one show. Oh, well, this isn't TV. I apologize. It doesn't work like that exactly. But then you know, you respond that way. This isn't TV. And of course they get pissed off. I say that because that happened to me. But yeah, animal calls and stuff like that, those can be either funny or they can be just really crazy. I took a call once where this lady called screaming that she just hit him. And the way it sounded like she had hit a person. And she just kept saying, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him." And I said, "What, what?" And, you know, got the location. We were sending everybody out there. And what it turned out was she ended up hitting a horse. Ooh. She was in a four-door, like, sedan, just a little car. But she hit it hard enough to where there was hardly any damage in the car, but she split the horse in half. And the horse was on either side of the car. And I said, I asked one of the people who called in to get their numbers, who responded out there, because they, when for those listening who are not in public safety, and I don't know if they do this in every agency or if you guys do it in the university or all, but like when fire and EMS ends up going out to the call, they call dispatch afterwards to get the time and you know, timestamp numbers and all of that. So they had called up and I asked them, was it really split in half? Was it really as bad as you guys were saying on the radio? And the guy says, it was amazing. He goes, you wouldn't believe what it was that we just saw out there. I said, are you serious? He goes, yeah, man, completely split in half. So
I'm surprised the farm made it through. I've seen damage from elk and any other type of, you know, like a deer or something, and the front half of the car looks like it ran into a wall, but
right.
A horse, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe because it's a high center of gravity.
I have no idea, or she was just going that fast that she just cut through it like butter. It was nuts. I don't think I got another animal complaint, or animal call rather, like that, but that one was the one that kind of takes the cake for me. But also with your career and stuff, you do tactical dispatching, and this is something that I've wanted to kind of cover on the show. I think we've only had one other person on the show talk about it, and he talked a little bit about it because it ended up turning out that he couldn't talk way more about it like it sounded in the beginning. So I'm excited to have you on because
ask me all the questions.
Yes, because we can talk about this. So for those who are listening that don't know what tactical dispatching is, and maybe even some dispatchers out there that didn't even know that there were tactical dispatching available, what exactly is it?
Tactical dispatchers,
yes.
In layman's terms, is doing what you do in your center out at a command post.
Okay.
And supporting an incident.
So give an example of an incident.
Well, tactical dispatchers are typically assigned to a SWAT team or a critical response unit or something that has specific missions and purposes. And so, for example, on a barricade suspect with a hostage, tactical dispatchers responding with a SWAT team would deploy. And then we would run that TAC channel. We would take all the information, assist with looking for suspect information, tracking teams, coordinating evacuations, and supporting the incident commander. Some teams that I've worked with or have typically will have a SWAT operator or a sergeant or somebody at the command post in that role if there aren't tactical dispatchers. And the way I look at it is, your primary mission is to track personnel and resources and call for mutual aid. And what do we do on a normal day-to-day basis? That's the role of a dispatcher. So allow us to do that out in the field, and we'll free up that person with a badge and a gun to go out and do what they're trained to do and let it, you know, cater to our strengths. You can tactical dispatch from a comm center. You can tactical dispatch from a command post. And the benefit to being out in the field is there is a lot of conversation that happens at a command post that needs to be documented. And it's our primary role to be a scribe. Yes, we're tracking personnel resources, but we're also scribing every action that the suspect takes, what the agency's taking response to, and anything that goes in the after-action report or along with the criminal case that goes along with the incident. And so our job is just to be there to document and assist the incident commander tactical commander and what they need, really utilizing us for what we do on a day-to-day basis. But out in the field, we're able to be a part of those conversations at the command post and be the eyes and ears on the radio for the tactical commanders to allow them to have conversations and do what they need to do to support those that are deployed out on scene.
It sounds intense, man. I was going to say, is it more multitasking and, I guess, intense or emotionally taxing being out there during that incident for tactical dispatching versus just a regular shift, but there's no shift that's regular. So
or routine.
Routine.
Well, you know the acronym for SWAT, right? Sit, wait, and talk.
Huh.
So I don't think there's a lot to get ramped up for an initial incident.
Uh-huh.
We typically, patrol has already responded, and they have a good perimeter or containment on the location. And our primary job when we go on scene is to relieve those patrol officers from that containment. And then they take containment around the neighborhood or business complex or wherever we're at. But our SWAT operators are going to be those that are directly adjacent to that building or location. And then to make sure that we get our arrest team, our react team, our snipers, and whatever resources we're going to deploy up and out there. And then, depending on the type of incident, it might be a sit-wait game where we're waiting for our negotiators to make contact. Now that we have everyone in place, negotiators go out and they start calling and seeing what we can do to resolve the situation. And so a lot of it, it's really intense for about 30 minutes, 45 minutes while we're trying to exchange people, evacuate neighbors or adjacent complex or whatever the case may be. And then once everyone's in place and negotiations start, it's kind of takes a step back. But at any time, given the type of incident we're on and who we're dealing with, it could go from 0 to 100, just like it would at your comm center. And in my opinion, the primary mission of tactical dispatchers in all of this that we do out in the field, for those that might say, well, why can't we just do it from our center, is that we want to take all of that chaos out from the center so that the dispatchers working routine incidents in their jurisdiction can focus on that. And they don't have to be bothered with on a tactical channel dealing with the SWAT incident now, but also having to answer phone calls for a barking dog or something that's a low priority when you're focused on something that's pretty intense. And so we want to take all that out from the center and have access to the same types of resources that you have in your center out in the field.
That's awesome. Because, you know, when I was dispatching still, we didn't have like a tactical team, dispatch-wise or anything. You know, we had our tag channel, and any high priority complaint that would come in, and we would tone out for code 7, and then all the other traffic would go to, you know, like secondary or something, and then we would have everything on the main channel. But then if it was something longer or drawn out like that, we would end up going to the tag channel. But there's only three of us in there. So with the three of us in there, you know, we're taking all those types of calls that come in while, you know, someone is on the tag channel with the rest of the team and trying to do everything that they want, but also answering those calls. So what I'm getting at is, did you guys create your own team, or is there something within the state of California that says that, you know, there's different teams and you just join them from your center, or how does that even work?
Each part of the state has a different different support in for tactical dispatch. Some of them are countywide tactical dispatch team. The SWAT team I'm associated with is a total of 6 law enforcement agencies and 2 fire agencies that make up the SWAT team.
Oh, wow.
So we have dispatchers from those 6 law enforcement agencies on our team. And so the benefit of that is that any SWAT call out in those jurisdictions then have a pool of dispatchers to go out in the field and support the incident.
Wow. Gotcha. Okay.
And on the fire side, we have the same. On the law side, it's tactical dispatch, and on the fire side, it's incident dispatchers.
Oh.
And they typically will deploy these large fires that we've had in California.
Right.
Deploy out, and the same thing, tracking resources and personnel, and making sure that everyone that goes out comes back safe.
Right.
And supporting the incident commander for on the fire side for a large fire or large complex incident that fire might be taking the primary for. So we both have the same type of field dispatching on both sides of the coin.
Man. So how many hours do you work, or does it depend on that actual incident?
Well, I hear back in the day before I joined the team, because I joined around 2007, we had one incident that ran more than an operational period of 12 hours.
Gotcha.
And so we will typically about once a year train with another local SWAT team. So in the event we had something that ran long, we're used to swapping out with another SWAT team. And our county has about 7 or 8 SWAT teams in the county, and we train with about 2 or 3 of them that we can swap out or work a joint incident together. I was part of an incident where a couple of armed suspects came on to our university property, and that took a total of 3 SWAT teams in order to clear several buildings, and it was something like 8 hours of searching.
Oh, man.
Just looking to make sure wherever that suspect could have gone, that we searched and did the best that we could. And it's obviously a university with multiple buildings and multiple high-rise buildings. And so we couldn't search everything, but we searched the ones within that geographic area that the suspect could have ran to or could have made entry. But had we not trained with those teams before, it might have added some complex or could have been a little more difficult communication-wise, or just the fact that we train with them, we know their names, and their dispatchers came as well along with their team, so it was very beneficial for us to have worked with them and trained with them prior to that day.
Right. Dang. So what are some of the incidents that you've worked? I mean, you sent me an email, and there are a bunch of them, but I guess, you know, one of the ones that really kind of sticks out to you, I guess, you know, incident-wise.
The most complex one was that one that I just mentioned with the multiple SWAT teams. Another one, I primarily were the head of my agency, where we had a speaker come on the campus that had protesters that were going to be there as well, and counter-protesters that were there to protest the protesters.
Jeez.
So we had, again, multiple law enforcement agencies, multiple SWAT teams, support from the Sheriff's Department and their jail teams. Undercover units and you name it, they were there. We had horses for Mobile Field Force, and it was a huge operation. And some of the work I do on the private side with event operations, I brought back into the law side and set up a unified command post with members of each agency and their command staff that were in there from both the law, EMS, the fire side, as well as representatives from our agency. And our local Joint Terrorism Task Force that was there. And pretty much if you thought somebody was there that should be there, they were there in that room. And it was a huge operation, very successful. And that's probably the one that sticks out as the, if you had to say what was the most complex one.
Yeah.
But on a typical deployment, we might deploy for a barricade suspect, somebody who has a hostage, or depending on the type of call or the incident or the crime that the suspect committed, along with their history, if they're a known suspect, and the caliber of past law enforcement history or statements that they made where it's something beyond a patrol response, we'll respond out as a SWAT team and as part of that element.
Man. So what does it take to be a tactical dispatcher?
Probably the number one thing I stress is teamwork.
Yeah.
Because you're outside of your environment.
Right.
You're not in a comm center. For us, technology is there, but it's not like it is at our center. If it's raining, we're lucky if we get an easy up. we do have a couple mobile command vehicles that we could, you know, deploy as well, if it's something that's going to be long term. But we've dispatched from under an easy up in the rain. We've been out in the 30s and 40s dispatching outside with lots of jackets and beanies. And on the extreme side, it's Southern California, so it's also hot during the summer, and
right.
we've been outside without a command post for a couple hours, where we're subject to the elements, with very few restroom facilities nearby.
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. One of the good things is they typically get in and out for our call out, so we're
no, well, there you go.
Hey, it's a
perfect.
Kind of a balance, right?
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man.
But we've seen a trend for dispatchers to be deployed in more pre-planned
uh-huh.
incidents. So if you have a marathon in your city, if you're a beach agency and you decide to hold a concert with 30,000 people on the beach, deploying out to pre-planned events to support the incident. And again, to take that extra call volume, that extra stress, to document those conversations that happened at the command post. I think special event dispatching, I don't know if there's actually a term for it, because it's not tactical, because you're there just working a special event with, you know, maybe you're in Southern California and a million people show up on
right.
your beach at a surfing event or a volleyball event where you've got an influx of people and you need to be in those conversations. And so I think in some centers, what you can do outside of being a dispatcher, a trainer, a supervisor, or a manager in command staff level, there's not a lot of special assignments that we can have. So tactical dispatching and event dispatching, where you go out and you support that event,
yeah.
Whether maybe you have a jurisdiction that has a football team or a baseball team or something where it's going to draw a lot of folks into your jurisdiction, and that's on a routine basis, on pre-planned, and you deploy out with your officers and the forces or your deputies that are out there to make sure that everything's documented and again taking that load off of your comm center.
So how does one start actually a tactical team? I mean, is there a way to do that in different dispatch centers? You know, those who are listening, they were thinking, you know, maybe we should do this same thing. Or does it solely fall on, you know, kind of the way you were saying it in the state, there are different, you know, teams that are built up that way.
I guess it depends on.
No, I was just going to say, have you, in your experience, noticed if every state is different or if agencies can actually do this themselves?
I'd say typically a tactical dispatch team is assigned to or is a function of a SWAT team.
Gotcha.
And what we've seen is the success we've had in deploying the SWAT teams and applying those to other special events, pre-planned events. And the role that those dispatchers that play with the SWAT team have can also be utilized in different areas. Whether you're supporting a massive search for a lost child, a lost person, whether you're part of evacuations because of a natural disaster or a fire, where, you know, maybe you're assigned to search and rescue. And so we see different areas where dispatchers can deploy and assist in these command posts and do what we normally do on an everyday basis. Maybe not
right.
every day, but something that we're trained to do.
Right.
And take that load off of the folks that are there. We've seen fires in Northern California where tactical dispatchers have deployed, and it's their responsibility to come in and for them to check in all the law personnel that are there as part of mutual aid. And we're not talking, you know, 10, 15 law personnel, we're talking hundreds.
Yeah.
That go out and have different neighborhoods or areas that they have to go and evacuate, do door knocks. And on the other side of that, once they go out there, we have to document it that we went out there, we knocked, we made contact, they refused, or they went along with the program and they were going to evacuate. Because you want to make sure that you're doing everything you can to let folks know that they're in the way of harm and danger and they need to leave. So type of dispatchers or incident dispatchers are very flexible in what we can go out and do and support different missions. And again, being out in the field has a lot of benefits, and you get to see some really cool stuff too at the same time.
Right.
But it really allows, it kind of gives you a bigger window into the overall mission that you may not get from your center. That might be a few miles away, or if you're in a large agency, it might be 50 miles, 100 miles, depending on how the size of your jurisdiction.
You know, I think we have a true part two to this episode, where we can talk probably all day about specific incidents, you know, pros and cons, you know, what worked, what didn't. Yeah, there's so much more that I want to ask. So we're definitely going to have to do another episode here to go deeper into this, because I know there's also a lot of people who listen to the podcast who've asked about this same thing, about tactical dispatching. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to put out on Twitter, throughout social media, on Facebook and such, any questions that the listeners have. And I'm going to have you come back on so we can talk more about this, because this is an interesting subject to me. I'm fascinated by this shit. So, but going into kind of the wrap-up of this episode, I want to know some of what you do with Kim Turner LLC. So you've got some different classes that you teach, and I really want to show how unique this company is with, you know, Kim Turner leading the way, and then yourself, and then like Ryan Dedman, and, you know, the other people who are part of your team. So if you can just kind of go through, you know, what you do, and you know, just some of the classes that that you taught.
Kim has a very unique style of teaching. She keeps it very down to earth, but she'll call you out on something that she thinks needs to be discussed.
Yes.
And keeps it just very real, as she says. And her classes are really about having a conversation. None of the instructors that teach for her come in with the mindset that we're gonna teach you something you don't know, because I've experienced a lot of learning when I'm the instructor because of the experience in the room. And all we're doing is facilitating discussion and what's worked for agencies, what has. I mean, that's not all we're doing, but
right.
A lot of it's facilitated discussion. So we talk about an incident and then we debrief it. There's a given that where we've taught recently, they've had a number of recent incidents and some dispatchers that have worked those incidents, and we'll ask them if they feel like sharing. And typically they do. But the learning from that is because that's real life. That's what worked, what didn't work,
right?
What would they do different next time? And it's just we're having an 8-hour conversation on if this happens, when it happens, what are some of the best practices, not only in the industry, but also what are some of the real practical, this worked, and it helped us with our mission. And those are the types of conversations that we're having in Kim's classes, or the Kim Turner LLC classes. And it's a different style of learning, because a lot of that is based on the input from the students in the class. So
right.
If you get a really quiet class, it usually turns into a staring contest. I can stand up there and stare and ask an open-ended question.
Right.
And we're expecting input from the folks that are in the room. And, you know, I've been in the industry for 15 years. I've worked at university police departments. And so there's a lot of calls I haven't handled and probably will never handle.
Right.
And there's a lot of knowledge and experience in the room, and we want to draw from that. Because that's real life. That's not something that we're bringing back in theory and giving you tools that you know may or may not work. We're learning from real people and their experiences, and that's what makes the classes a wealth of information. Is those conversations in the class. On top of that, we also have a variety of instructors that are both from communication side, but also from the patrol side. And it's a blended class where you get a perspective from either a SWAT team leader or somebody from command staff who can give you maybe a little peek behind the curtain. And these are some of the thought processes that go behind decisions that are made out in the field. And so it's not just a class for dispatchers taught by dispatchers. It's a class for dispatchers taught by dispatchers and field personnel that are also responding out there. It's kind of a holistic approach to that, where you get, both sides of it, and how decisions we make in our comm centers are able to, or decisions we make and how they impact the field, and vice versa. Why, you know, all of our instructors leave their egos at the door and ask, you know, what feedback can I take back to my agency, to the people I supervise on our team or at our agency? And you get a lot of, well, why did you do this? Why do you do that? Why do we wait for this? And why do you ask us to do that? And they have real conversations. And sometimes it's just that conversation that needs to happen to figure out why it is the way they do things they do, and vice versa. We can help them say, well, this is why we do what we do. And we learn how it impacts each other.
Right. See, and so that's one of the best ways to do this, too, because when I was in dispatch, I used to hate going to training courses where, like, the first 30 minutes of the training course was all, like, self-promotion. And then the last bit of it was tools that can be used and not really any conversation. And I thought, so I'm just sitting in here and you're just telling me what I should do, and then I'll figure it out. But then there's other, you know, training like what you're talking about, where you're having these conversations and you're talking for, you know, those 8 hours. And I have found, especially doing podcasts, is the longer I have people talking, the more they continue to talk and to continue to share, they feel comfortable. And that's how you learn. You're learning from each other. So like you saying that where you work, there are certain calls that you will probably never take. Like you said, you're learning from the dispatchers that are in there with you as well, because they're telling you about this, and you guys are learning together. And that's the way to do it, man. That I'm impressed. That's really the way to do it, is just really talking and having that conversation. So what about the actual the training courses that you do? I mean, are there, like, I know you guys have, like, some sort of, what is it? It's like pillars of training or something to that effect.
Sure. So our four pillars are leadership, wellness, critical incidents, and then technology as well. I co-facilitate the critical incidents and active shooter course, and then I'm also helping with the leadership courses as well. I also teach for a regional criminal justice training center, and we're one of the two places in California that offer a 2-week dispatch supervisor course and a 2-week civilian supervisor course. So I'm big on the tactical critical incident side, but I'm also big on the leadership side as well.
Right.
So Kim's sprinkled me here and there with the leadership classes, and just extremely passionate about those courses. But the other thing that is unique about Kim is, if an agency comes to her and says, hey, we've got this issue, can you put together an 8-hour class on it? Or, you know, ongoing training for trainers or your CTOs or whomever it is, that whatever issues you might have as a center or regionally, Kim's interested in making her courses all about real life things that we can have a positive impact on in our profession. So she's put together classes for specific agencies and gone out and taught it, because it was something that they asked for or requested. Might be the only place that she offers it,
right,
because of that need at that time.
Right.
But it's definitely something that's unique to Kim's courses.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you very, very much for being on this episode. I learned a lot, but there's so much more to talk about. And like I said, we definitely need to do another episode to really double down on the tactical dispatching. So like I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send a message out, and I'm going to post it up to get some more questions from those from all over the place who listen to the podcast. And then I'm going to hit you up with those so we can get some explanations. And
I'm going to have to leave my ego at the door, because I know I'm going to get some devil's advocates out there, which I you know what, much with Kim's mantra, let's keep it real. Let's talk about it. And we've had some folks come out to our agency, to our training, and say, yeah, this isn't going to work for us for tactical dispatching, given they have a full-time SWAT team, and the way they operate within their organizational structure wouldn't allow for that. So, you know, it works for some, but it doesn't work for all. Yeah, bring it on.
Awesome. Well, thank you again very much for being on. For those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. It's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @901podcast. This episode is supported by Kim Turner LLC. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as the KimTurner.com. And make sure to check out everything they have. I cannot talk enough about them. And as always, we're supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. This episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thejabberlog.com, as well as your favorite podcasting app. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.